must constantly look at things in a different way.
The Healthcare Education Transformation Podcast was created by two physical therapists out of the desire to learn more about the different educational roles in physical therapy and healthcare, and how healthcare education works by talking with educational leaders and people with different perspectives within physical therapy and across interdisciplinary lines on how education can be improved to disrupt the status quo of healthcare education. This is our journey, and thanks for listening. Are you a third-year physical therapy student that excels on tests when you have study guides, checklists, and deadlines? With all of the information available about how to prepare for the NPTE, it's easy to get disorganized and not feel prepared going into the big day. NPTE Prep Success is an online course that provides PT students easy-to-use study guides and step-by-step guidance through the NPTE preparation. To learn more, visit kylericeprep.com. Thank you again all for your continued support, and now for the show. Hey everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Healthcare Education Transformation Podcast. I'm Brandon Pollan, and I'm one of your co-hosts, and of course, as always, I'm joined by my other co-hosts, F. Scott Veal and Dr. Stephanie Wyrock, and today, we welcome a physical therapist with experience across many avenues of pediatrics, from acute, inpatient, and outpatient, as today we welcome Dr. Christine Walker. Now, Christine, thanks so much for coming on the show today to share your information with our listeners. I think getting this perspective on pediatrics is going to be something that's very, very important, and especially from your perspective as a relatively newer clinician. Do you think you can kind of give our audience a little bit of some background about kind of who you are and kind of what's led you up to where you're at today?
Sure. So I am a practicing physical therapist in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I graduated from PT school only in 2012. So I started my own cash practice actually only a few years out in an attempt to blend two of my loves, which is orthopedics and pediatrics. So throughout that journey, as you mentioned, I have worked in almost every pediatric setting that you can, from the outpatient to inpatient rehab to acute care. And now I work primarily with youth athletes in my own practice. So that's kind of the brief summary of my professional career, but I'll save some of the details for later because I'm sure you're going to ask things related to them.
Yeah, for sure, Christine. What really sparked your interest, and what kind of lit your fire when it came to pediatrics? And out of all your peds experiences, which one was your favorite so far?
Let me tell you the one thing that did not light my fire for pediatrics, and that was babysitting, okay? So it's probably shocking to my mother that I became a pediatric therapist because I babysat once when I was younger, and I was like, this is not for me, okay? So it wasn't babysitting. Did not fall in love with kids that way, but I was a competitive athlete growing up. I played soccer, travel soccer year round for years. And I also did competitive diving for a little while. And so during the summer, I would actually run camps and help other kids, usually elementary school aged kids, learn and increase their soccer skills and diving skills. And so that was probably the first time that I really found an interest in enjoying helping children, whether that was, you know, doing a normal activity such as soccer or diving, or even just helping them with something that they were struggling with. So I've really been working with youth athletes for a long time. But once I got to PT school, I honestly had a lot of wonderful opportunities, and I can only attest that to my school really providing them. But I had a lot of wonderful opportunities to work with kids, and that really cemented my love for working with kids. And there were so many experiences, but one that really stands out to me was a program at my school called MUSC Kids Heart Health Program, which is actually pediatric weight management and preventative cardiology program. And part of that program was the kids getting twice a week exercise classes, and they would get students to run those exercise classes. So me and several of my PT school classmates got into volunteering for that program, and we basically had free run to come up with whatever fun exercise activities for the kids. And that really, for me, started to open my eyes to how much I enjoyed working with children.
So, Christine, you talked a lot about how you had all these great opportunities in PT school. I mean, it sounds like this weight management program that you did was really, really a great experience. But what about in the DPT curriculum at your school? Did you get a really good educational foundation in pediatrics from your program to prepare you for graduation?
I felt like my school did a pretty good job with their pediatric education with regards to really focusing on, hey, we first want to teach you what normal kids look like, what kids who aren't struggling with either delays or disabilities or injuries look like, and then show you what abnormal development looks like. And so they did that really well from a textbook standpoint, but to be honest, the other opportunities at school to actually interact with the kids that they did to enhance our education was really what made, it really made all that teaching come to life. So as part of classes, we did everything from performing a Bayley assessment on a, you know, 3 to 5 year old kid that we had to bring in, to going to a special needs school and treating some of their kids for a few days. There was just a variety of experience that really allowed us to apply what we were learning to actual patient situations and not just, you know, case studies on paper. And honestly, that made really the biggest difference when it came to preparing me for, you know, my pediatric rotations. And I think that's another big part. I know that's not necessarily the curriculum per se. And depending on your program, I understand there might have to be a little certain bit of luck to get a pediatrics rotation. But my pediatrics rotations obviously really reinforced everything else that came along with, you know, the classroom learning. So honestly, it's a blend of things. I can't say it was like just the book learning.
So then once you graduated, what have you done to expand your pediatric experience? I mean, you graduated in 2012, you had all these great applied learning experiences that you could utilize. Now you've graduated, how have you expanded your educational journey since then?
Well, I guess it's hard to not come back and kind of reflect on like how I guess I got to this point and including those rotations. So when I went to select them, I felt really stuck between pediatrics and ortho, because honestly, those were my two loves in life. And that's really why I've now transitioned to starting my own practice and trying to blend the two. But, you know, those rotations had such an impact on me and the decisions I made on, you know, how to pursue even learning and job selections afterwards. So for example, you know, I did 2 ortho and 2 peds rotations because I really knew it was going to come down to those two areas for me. One of my pediatric ortho rotation, or excuse me, one of my pediatric outpatient rotations was in Charlotte, and the other was an acute care setting at Texas Children's Hospital, specifically in neurology and neurosurgery. But to be honest with you, what's really funny about all this is that what shaped me the most is my outpatient ortho experiences, because I was really blessed with very unique ones. And I think even if you're really interested in peds, you may sometimes forget of how much you can learn and be influenced by the other settings, and how much what you can learn in those settings can really make you a better peds therapist. And so I feel like I have to mention those rotations because, you know, my first rotation ever as a student was at an outpatient ortho clinic that occasionally saw a kid here and there, but not regularly. But I was completely blessed and spoiled because they provided amazing customer experience when it came to talking with patients and family members. They encouraged a really great lifestyle for their therapists. They took 2-hour lunch breaks and encouraged people to go work out in the gym during that time. You know, they even came into work 30 minutes early to pray for their patients beforehand. It was just a very, very unique setting. And on top of all that, they didn't ever even double and triple book. They never even double booked, okay, their patients, all while being a inpatient, in-network clinic, right? It's pretty much unheard of. And yet they were still profitable and doing well. Clinic's still alive today. So they weren't just doing this from the goodness of their heart. And so I really found from that experience, I was like, this is what physical therapy is supposed to be. This is the care and the attention that I'm supposed to be able to give people to really make lasting changes and transformation. And so that was always something that I carried over with me, even on my peds journey. because my second ortho rotation, while it was amazing, and I had a residency trained CI who was incredible and is still a friend to this day, you know, we were double, triple, even quadruple booked sometimes. And I just never felt like patients were really getting the excellent care they deserve. And so I kind of knew coming out of that, I was like, I can't go work in an ortho PT mill. And yet outpatient peds was a lot of development, and I liked it, but I wasn't sure I wanted to fully do that like 40 hours a week either. I was kind of stuck in this middle ground. And then I wasn't ready to move to Houston to pursue acute care peds, even though I loved it. So I was in this really weird position. So I was like, how do I take this journey of becoming the peds therapist that I want to become, realizing that, you know, the opportunities are limited, and I also feel this obligation to my patients to be treating them in a certain way. So that's a long way to say, basically, after school, I went on a very non-traditional path to being a pediatric therapist. So I originally started as a outpatient therapist, just a couple days a week at a clinic. And if any of the students out there listening are thinking about doing this, I will say this is a very complicated situation to take a job at a private outpatient pediatric clinic, because a lot of them are in this weird state of not being able to guarantee you hours, a lot of them actually pay you per patient. So you're in this really weird situation where you're not really sure how quickly your job's going to grow, et cetera. And so that didn't work out, because after about 6 months, I was still only working 2 days a week. And so that, I'm not the only person who I know with this story. I have several friends that this happened to as well. And I started looking for something else. And at this point, I was so desperate to get back in the hospital, because I just really loved pediatric acute care. I was like, I don't care if I have to treat adults, like, just get me back in the hospital, get me doing something. And so I did. But this is the interesting thing, just because I had that short amount of pediatric experience, plus I had some really strong pediatric rotations, I was able to get a job on the understanding of, they're like, well, we don't have any openings in acute peds. Like, we rarely do, but, you know, we're going to hire you. And since we know you have this awesome experience in it at Texas Children's, which is the largest children's hospital in the country, we might get you in there eventually. That's kind of what, and I'm hired thinking, whatever, I just need more work. I'm a new grad. I can't work two days a week. I'm like, that sounds all good, but I'm not going to, you know, count on promises that didn't work out like last time. So I took a really untraditional route. I went from outpatient peds to acute care adults. And I'd actually never done acute care adults in my life. So that was a little bit of an interesting wake-up call. So the funny thing is, what I've learned the most, though, through this journey of kind of bouncing around the different areas, is that you really are going to get as good as the people you surround yourself with, whether that's in peds or in adults. I mean, honestly, and there's a lot of things that you can learn from treating adults that you can then translate to do pediatrics. And they always told me, if you can do peds, you can do anything. I can't remember how many people told me that when I was doing peds rotations. They're like, if you can handle pediatrics, if you can handle parents, if you can handle the kids, if you can do all that, anything else is a walk in the park. And so I did find that to be true, that the pediatric experience challenges you in multiple ways, because you're handling multiple situations, and can really translate to other parts of your career.
Yeah, that's a pretty good point, Christine. I just have kind of a follow-up to that. You know, you had this great didactic work, and you had, you know, these great clinical rotations, but was there anything that you still kind of felt unprepared for coming out of school related to the pediatric world?
Absolutely. I would say, in particular, there are two things that you're never prepared for in school, for when you go into the pediatric world. The first is just talking to parents, honestly, and realizing how much treating the kid is about also managing the parents and their expectations. There's just, I'm not sure there's much you can do in school to prepare you for that dynamic, other than realizing that you need to treat the parents so much, essentially like a patient as well. Of course, you're speaking to them on a different level than you are a, you know, 5-year-old or even maybe a 13-year-old. But truthfully, you have to manage them just as if they're your client, just as much as the kid. And honestly, the second thing that you're never prepared to deal with is to watch your kids die. or even just to watch them slowly decline. Like, I had three kids pass away on me in 8 weeks at Texas Children's. And I mean, that's working at the biggest children's hospital in the country on a neurosurgery floor. So you can imagine they see the toughest cases, but like nothing truly can prepare you for that or for handling that. And personally, it doesn't get easier as you get older, because if you do things like become a mom, or it just becomes even harder, because you can see yourself in that position and relate on a totally different level. So can't fault school for that one either, but it's just something you have to know going into pediatrics that you're going to face and you're going to deal with, and you have to know it's coming and that it will be okay, and that it's still just a privilege to help people in their time of greatest need.
I think that's a very powerful point there, Christine, and I really appreciate you sharing that. I guess I'm going to ask this question now, because we were originally going to ask it a little bit later, but I think the timing is perfect now, is that, you know, now with those two struggles there, with being able to figure out how to best communicate and get buy-in from the kid and the parent, and then how to deal with kind of the loss of a child in this kind of situation. I guess my question is, as a newer clinician or someone who's about to go through that or is experiencing that, what should they do, or what are some strategies that you would recommend if they're going through that to help them make the best of it and go forward from there?
A lot of prayer. Am I allowed to say that? truthfully, it's something that you walk through with your colleagues, obviously, and your family. And it's something I try very hard to only bring on so many people. I will also say that, because it's easy to also try to share a lot of these sad stories and to people who don't really, who aren't in healthcare or don't really understand the profession. And you're also not trying to scare anybody. So I just think you have to have some safe people who you can share those hard things with, and talk through and pray through with, because for me, like a lot of my family members are in healthcare. And my dad's a physician and my brother's a PT, and we've got healthcare everywhere. And so I feel like I have a lot of people who have been in the shoes that I can go before and talk to. You know, my uncle's an oncologist, so he sees this unfortunately all the time. You can't run away from it. I think the biggest thing that I've learned, probably when I was a new clinician, I did more of burying the feelings. And that was my way of dealing with it than actually processing the grief behind it. And I think we need to just not be afraid to be real and, you know, give parents a hug or give a kid a hug or just be there and let them cry for you. I mean, I've had to do that. Like, and that's just, I think when we can experience that grief with each other and acknowledge it and recognize it for what it is, for me, I don't know if I'd be able to do it without the great hope that I have in God, honestly, and without prayer. So that's about the best advice I can give, is to pray and to process it with other people.
I think that's a really good point, Christine, because I mean, as physical therapists, even though we're not physicians and we don't a lot of times have as many patients that may pass away, but it does happen. I know a book that I have read that has really helped me understand death and really kind of see it from a different perspective and really appreciate my job as a physical therapist, improving quality of life versus quantity of life, is Being Mortal by Atul Gawande. Wonderful book. If you haven't read it yet, definitely should read it. What are some books that you have read that you think people should read that may help them, that may give them nuggets of gold for life lessons or business lessons, or even in lessons like we just talked about with these painful situations that may involve a lot of emotional issues?
For me personally, the last year reading, I've been working through the book of Romans with my Bible study. And to me personally, honestly, that has been the biggest transformation for me on contemplating death and thinking about really the great hope we have in life. But beyond that, I've also been reading a lot of books on business, just because that's where I'm at in the stage right now of growing my business, two businesses actually. And a fun book on life and business and just thoughts and treating people and really providing an experience, whether it's because you're running a business or because you're treating patients one-on-one, honestly, is Capital Gains by Chip Gaines, which is the one of the stars of Fixer Upper. And I've really just enjoyed reading his very candid perspective on life and running a business, and how he, you know, really looks at the differences between people and how we can grow and bridge those differences and how we can still all work together. And so I think the funny thing is you sometimes find golden nuggets in places that you wouldn't expect. And the biggest thing that I've really learned actually from growing a business side is learning how to communicate. And I've read so many different books and been part of so many different groups that have been teaching me this lately, but learning how to communicate and really understanding the psychology and the emotion behind it has made a huge difference, not only in my business, but I still PR in one weekend a month as an acute care peds therapist, just because I love it. I do. And so I find it fun to also use that time to really provide people who I interact with in the hospital a just completely different experience than they're used to getting. You know, we know healthcare can tend to be pretty cold and impersonal and all business. And so really providing that experience that I really believe in and want to give people outside of healthcare, or outside of, you know, my job in a hospital, and giving that to them in the hospital. And so I think I've found inspiration from that from so many different areas, but even something such as Chip Gaines' book. So everybody should really go read it. I had to wait a long time at the library though to get it. So warning.
No, that's great. And I think that's a really powerful point. And, you know, for our listeners, if you guys are perhaps interested in that book, just check out our show notes and then you'll be able to have the link to kind of look at this book here. So Christine, I think, you know, that's been such a very powerful take and I really appreciate that perspective and where you're coming from, but I'm going to back up a little bit and kind of go back to the education realm. And, you know, and I know we talked about kind of what you thought was good, what are some of the struggles that you came with coming out being a peds clinician and some of the things you're unprepared for. But I'm going to kind of ask you now, looking back as a peds clinician, how do you think that how pediatrics is taught in DPT education should be changed to better address the needs of the future practicing peds clinician?
Well, I've thought about this a lot, especially as I reflect on different people's experiences at different schools and kind of the stories you get when you're out in the field and hearing about how others learned and got to where they were. You know, the biggest problem people have is they learn a lot about peds in the textbook, and then when they get out to actually handle a baby or a patient, they have no idea what to do. And, you know, a squiggly, wiggly, whatever baby is a lot different than the cute little doll you're practicing on in class. So I got really lucky, actually, when I was in PT school. When I was taking my first pediatrics class, my sister-in-law had her first baby, and she lived in the same town. And so I'm taking this development class and learning about it, and at the same time watching my little nephew, you know, grow and do all the skills. And so, you know, now for being a mom to two kids, like, I've watched normal development from 0 to 2 multiple times, and that is just so, so crucial when it comes to understanding pediatrics, and I would even argue to understanding adults as well. My grandmother jokes, you're, you know, once an adult, twice a baby. So, you know, it's true. If you like pediatrics, a lot of times geriatrics is just kind of the reversing of that process, right? And a lot of the same skills that the kids are learning to do are things the geriatrics need to do. So that's more food for thought. But understanding normal development, no matter what age group you're working with, is important, but especially if you're going to be working in that under 5 population or with kids with severe disabilities who are going to be functioning at that level for a lot of their lives. So the best thing you really can do is to actually get a chance to hands-on handle what babies are like. And we know me, I didn't have the babysitting experience. So for me, having my nephew and then getting to be a mom, I had my first child shortly after, like a year after PT school, year and a half. So getting that experience truly hands-on is is really the biggest difference in how prepared you are to actually jump into a pediatric setting versus still need a lot of hand-holding and teaching from the beginning. And I guess that's something we hadn't talked about now, but I do want to mention at some point during this podcast, which is that it's really hard to get into pediatrics if you absolutely have no experience while you're in school. So if it's something that you remotely think that you want to do, you really should try your hardest. I understand it's not all under your control, but to try your hardest to get one rotation of some kind in some sort of pediatric setting, because it's going to be really, really hard to find an employer who's willing to train you from ground zero that has absolutely done nothing in pediatrics. And so that's just a little side note to those who are thinking about going into it, is to really try to get at least one clinical experience, because most people are willing to work with you if you've at least had some basic foundation.
Yeah, that's a good point, Christine. And just out of curiosity, what kind of residency options are there out there for students who are looking to get that experience that you were talking about in pediatrics? You know, if there's maybe just an avenue or two that you could talk about that could really help people facilitate a pediatric career, what would they be?
Sure. So if you're not able to get that experience during school, or, you know, you decide later in your career, a residency could be a good option. There are some out there. I honestly only know, I know very few people who have actually done them. And some of the ones that have, I still know had trouble getting pediatric jobs even when they graduated. So it's interesting how it's definitely not an automatic, you know, gateway through. I really think your best chance is at developing as much experiences as you can. Like I said earlier, surrounding yourself with people who are, you know, really willing to teach you. And you've got to come at it with this attitude of like, I'm going to mess up and I'm going to need somebody to help me learn. Especially in pediatrics, because boy, let me tell you, kids can throw you all sorts of interesting curveballs you weren't expecting.
So it sounds like some of the advice that you're giving our listeners, if they want to do pediatrics, is that you should get a rotation if you haven't already. Otherwise, it's difficult to get into pediatrics, and you need to surround yourself with people who are willing to teach you these skills to make sure that you're a great therapist. But what advice, besides that, is there any other advice that you would give to a new graduate who wants to start working at a location that does primarily teach pediatrics?
Hang out with as many kids as you can. I mean, really, there are a lot of volunteer opportunities, even if your school didn't provide them. And the hands-on experience, it's just hands down the best way to do it. You know, there are a lot of like miracle leagues where children with disabilities can go play you know, baseball and other sports that they're always looking for volunteers on. Things like that are just other great ways to get your foot in the door and really get some of that experience, even if you maybe weren't provided that during school. So those would be some of my other ideas that I would recommend for people.
Yeah, so kind of talking about the hands-on experience, Christine, what are some of the mistakes either that you made or that you've seen made in dealing with kids that you really learned from over the course of your career?
This one goes back to communication. I'm not afraid to confess one of the biggest mistakes I made when I was a student. And the key here is you really need to know who knows what. Okay, so let me explain what I mean by that. As a student, I made the mistake of not really checking and knowing what the parents knew versus what the kid knew versus what the doctors knew versus what the chart said. And once you make that mistake, you never do it again. I walked into a teenage boy's room to check on him before he was going for surgery the next day to remove a tumor that was 5 centimeters deep in his head, okay? So in his brain. And, you know, only to find out later that the boy didn't know he was going yet for surgery. And well, it became pretty obvious when he started freaking out at what I was talking about. And that was not a very good moment. I thought the kid knew and he didn't know. And so one of the biggest mistakes this all comes back to the communication and the relationships and the fact that you are balancing a lot of different people. You're balancing the kid, you're balancing the parents. If you're in the hospital, you're also balancing, you know, the doctors that are directly there with you, the chart, et cetera. You've got to know who knows what, okay? And to be able to manage all those different personalities and I would say even expectations of all those different people is really, really important to being successful in pediatrics. So you make that mistake once and then you never walk into a room again without knowing, okay, so who knows what?
Yeah, no, I think those are some really, really good points there. And I think, you know, going back to the managing expectations, I think that's something that as therapists, that's just absolutely critical no matter what field you're in. But especially I could see how definitely that's more for the peds perspective. And I must admit, I have a confession. Part of the reason why I don't like treating pediatrics is because I don't like dealing with all of that with the parents and the kids and stuff. I like to just kind of stick with the adults. But I think that's a really good and powerful lesson because I'll confess too, I've made that mistake myself too. And you're right. Once you make that mistake, you never make it happen again.
Nope.
So to kind of wrap up here, you know, we normally, Christine, like to ask this last question to all of our guests because we're just so curious what everyone's thought is to this last final question. And the question is, if you could change one aspect of healthcare education, whether that be DPT or other healthcare provider related, which aspect would you change and how would you change it?
Man, so with this question, you really have me torn between like practical answers and idealism and everything. But honestly, just with healthcare in general, my biggest thing is I just want to change the experience people have with it. It's so cold. It's so impersonal on a big level. And, you know, maybe it's the yoga training in me coming out, but, you know, how can we expect people or even students to really have true transformation and healing in such a cold and impersonal environment. And for me, that was really a huge motivator in starting my own practice and going kind of the non-traditional path when it came to being out of school and to really start doing that, you know, sooner rather than later in my career after I felt, you know, more established or whatever false belief I thought I had to have before I started my own thing. You know, lasting healing or lasting learning is because we really understand the root of what's going on. And if that's one thing that I wish we could see change in education and healthcare in general.
So Christine, you know, we've really enjoyed this conversation. I think we've covered a lot of areas. We've covered things as deep as dealing with a patient who passes away to as fun as mistakes that you've made in the clinic. It's always nice to know that, especially when you're a young therapist, that it's okay to make mistakes. Life still goes on. You know, where can we find you on social media or where can we find you online? Because I'm sure that a lot of our listeners are going to have more questions for you.
Sure. And I'd be happy to connect with anyone. You can check out, I'm in a lot of places at this point. So you can check out my clinic's website, which is drwalkerpt.com. And you can also check out my other business where I'm helping physical therapists build their websites so that they can attract more new patients online from the internet. And that is at ptwebsitesecrets.com. And on Instagram, I'm at Dr. Walker PT. So that's the Dr. Walker PT again. And I also have a Facebook page where I'm becoming more active, which is called Christine Walker's PT Website Secrets. So there's a lot of different ways you can get up with me. Any of those avenues will suffice, or just find me on Facebook.
Yep, and I can vouch for Christine. She does great work on the website. So if any of you need work out there, go hit Christine up. She does good work.
Thanks, Scott.
No, love it. And you know, for our listeners who are kind of curious about that, we'll put all the links in the show notes so you guys have access if you're ever looking. But you know, again, Christine, thanks so much for your time and your perspective. And it's always a pleasure. And thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Healthcare Education Transformation Podcast, as we greatly appreciate your support to help us advance healthcare education. We are very happy to announce that we have created a new tool to help develop clinicians into better experts. With that being said, we have created the HET Light Tool, which LIGHT stands for Learning Integrated Towards Expertise. And what we've done is we've taken our first year's worth of episodes with experts in the fields of healthcare and education, and we've taken one golden nugget or theory on expertise and presented it to you in a very easily consumable format so that people can take one lesson or nugget per week and map out and plan how to incorporate it into your clinical and educational practices. And by the end of the year, we think you'll be pleasantly surprised at how far you've progressed towards becoming an expert. To find out more, please check it out at pteducator.com/HET, which is also available in our show notes. Thank you again all for your continued support.
Thank you for attending class today, and we hope that you learned something and gained value from the content.
If you'd like to schedule office hours with us, feel free to add us on Twitter at HET Podcast, on Instagram, HET Podcast, on Facebook, The Healthcare Education Transformation Podcast, and the homepage, healthcareeducationtransformationpodcast.com.
And for those of you following along in the syllabus, extra credit can be obtained by liking us, sharing us, and leaving a review.
Let's continue our journey up Mount Educational Success as lifelong learners.